This is Pure Decking show number 411 for Thursday, something, something, whatever year. This show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I'm waiting on zip disks to make a comeback. It's been a bit. I'm Morps. Say, what are you?
Zip disks. Great. Doing that for a while. Making me feel old, man. Feel old.
I could see the casing zip disks. We're in making a comeback, and they're just
now
SSD cards?
Original zip disks. You know, I mean, the hipsters were doing everything else old is new again. Why not that?
Yeah, they truly didn't get their time. I mean, CDs came out too quickly afterwards.
Oh, man, you know what didn't have their day? Digital cassettes.
I actually had some digital cassettes.
Yep. That was a thing, a very short-lived thing, but it was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or HD DVDs. Did they have enough time?
Yeah, but it was murdered by Blu-ray, though. That was less of a, it didn't have its time, and more of a VHS Betamax thing.
Blu-ray didn't even have a day.
Not really, yeah.
It's over and done with.
Yeah, streaming really, really nipped that one. I mean, Blu-rays, you know, stuff still comes out on Blu-ray, and you still get a Blu-ray player, but I haven't turned my Blu-ray player on in a long time. In fact, the batteries in the remote started leaking on me the other day. So it's like, oh, shit.
I mean, the only Blu-ray player I have is a PS3, and that's the only reason I bought the PS3.
My God, now that I think about it, my Blu-ray player is about 15 years old.
Yeah.
Is it? Well, 15? No, it's maybe 10. Maybe it's, I had it, it's the same player I had before I moved, changed jobs, and all that shit, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My Blu-ray player mostly streams things, but.
Yeah, that, I did more of that with my Blu-ray player than actually playing Blu-rays.
I did buy a Blu-ray player that streamed things, so I would have a Blu-ray player, though.
I'm trying to think if I've actually ever watched. I did, because I went out and bought some Blu-rays just so I would have an excuse to play them on the Blu-ray player. None of them were any good movies, so that's the funny part.
The only Blu-ray I have, and I bought it by accident because it was on sale, I didn't realize it was Blu-ray at the time, is the Pacific series.
Yeah, okay. But yeah.
That's rewatchable.
Zip discs. I think those are going to be on the way back in.
With bell bottoms and plaid.
And plaid.
Yeah. Mustaches.
Mustaches never went out. That handlebar mustache is timeless.
So.
Ooh. We'll have to start listening to Pearl Jam again.
Yeah.
No.
Nope.
They're still kind of around. Crash Test Dummies. We need to bring back the Crash Test Dummies. I want a fucking reunion tour.
I don't think you do, Madman. Things you think you want, but you don't really want.
Yeah, I was all, like, up, all those, I always love bringing up the old Commodore 64, and it's like, I'm going to use some real hardware for a change. So you put the SD card reader away, you get out a fucking 1541 floppy drive, and you're like, oh yeah, there's a reason nobody uses these nowadays.
It's because I can play Orchid Trail on my cell phone.
So, anyways, I guess I should finish out the intro. Tonight we have Are You?
Up.
And we have Madman.
Hola, como esta, mi amigos?
So, I had to open up the Woodfords because I drank all the cheap bourbon during the debate. So. Then you all tell me the drinking games are supposed to be played with beer. It's like, oh, well, that would have been easier.
Well, luckily we missed a few drinks for you because you would have died.
Yep. I don't even want to get into politics, but that was a fucking mess.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, man.
It was entertaining. I'll give you that.
It's, I mean, then again, I'm the kind of dude who rocks up for internet blood sport, you know, and gets excited for a blood sport.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys, you know, watch many blood sports, but a weird form of online debate where no, it's no holds bar. I mean, you want to call your opponent a pedophile? Go right ahead. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was good. He had more energy than both those oppositions that he was debating.
Oh, the
two on one's a hard fight, but he should have let some of his statements just hang in the air.
Yeah,
instead of really sniping back. I think a lot of pundits picked up on that. I'm not saying I'm a pundit, but a lot of people saying that if Trump had just given Biden 5 minutes of air, he would have fucking fell over himself. But it was good.
Yeah, the funniest meme I saw floating around was said, you know, Trump thoroughly defeated his opponent, Chris Wallace, in the debates. And there was also Biden wandering around muttering. So,
yeah.
It's like, that was yep, okay.
Much it. I'm looking forward to seeing Caramello Koala go up against, zap the gay guys. Mr. Pence.
Cop Kamala versus versus Milk Toast there.
I can see how this is going to go. A nasty brown woman just calls white man racist for 90 minutes. You know what I mean? That's how it's going to go. She won't debate him. She'll just throw mud at Trump for 90 minutes. If he's clever, he'll just go, I don't need to defend the president. The president can defend himself. Now let's get back to the subject.
That will be interesting to see how it goes down. But
looking forward to it. It's going to be, in bullshit times that we're in right now.
I mean, the world's already on fire. We might as well have fun with it, right?
Might as well send smoke signals. You know what I mean? The fire's already there.
Fire's lit. Send some smoke signals. Let's get out the, get out the hot dogs, maybe make some s'mores. I mean, you know.
What did you think, Madman?
Oh, about the debate? I try not to.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Well, if anything, we did get the level of debate we should have expected.
Oh, yeah, I thought the Swedish chef may have won, but Chewbacca had some good points.
Ah.
Anyway.
Anyway.
On a completely unrelated note, so, you guys will just find this one funny. Hack 5 makes a lot of interesting hardware, so I keep an eye on what they do. And this isn't a decking thing. I don't have a link for it. I'm just, talking. And I went and looked at their website because they put out a new version of the Wi-Fi Pineapple. I've got a couple of them. It's a fairly fun little tool to play with. If you don't know what it's for doing, quote, Wi-Fi assessments, unquote. It's totally a tool to walk around with running car Metasploit off a battery pack in your backpack. Anyways, you get a couple of them and hook them up to a Raspi, you'll run the battery pack in your backpack down a little bit, but nobody will know you have it. You can just monitor the thing off your cell phone. And those are good times because it's just amazing to see how many devices will sit there and try to connect to the car Metasploit Pineapple while the other one's beaconing out. As accepting anything, and it's just, I had one doing de-auth attacks, and the other one sitting there running car Metasploit, so that everything around it was just getting knocked off Wi-Fi. So then anything said, "I am trying to connect to Linksys. I am Linksys." Anything's trying to connect, it was just like,
"I'm your Huckleberry."
Yeah, it was. I don't run those kind of tests very often because it tends to piss a lot of people off. They don't understand why the Wi-Fi devices aren't working. Just casually reach into the backpack and flip the power switch when you're done. Go read the SD cards later, see what all you got. It is amazing how many network logins you can collect doing shit like that. Anyways, purely for testing purposes. But anyway, so I had gone to the website because they put out a new version of the pineapple. I wanted to take a look at it. And I got looking at the USB rubber duckies, which are a scripting platform, basically. And I've got some of their newer stuff, Bash Bunny and some things like that. But I hadn't really looked at the rubber duckies in a while. And they've changed the form. I don't know when they did this. They could have done this years ago, and I just didn't notice it. They don't look like a toy that you plug into a USB drive anymore. They look like the generic little swing out, you know, the metal cover USB drive. Well, I've got a drawer full of the damned things because you go to every conference, every con, anytime you're ordering files over the internet and they're going to mail them on a flash drive, that's the flash drive they send it to you on because they're cheap as balls. But when I realized that's what the USB rubber ducky looked like, it's like, son of a bitch. Because it meant I had to go through that drawer and take apart all seven of the ones that I found that looked like that to make sure none of them were USB rubber duckies that somebody had tried to slip me.
Nice.
They weren't. So now I've got some flash drives. Most of them survived disassembly and were able to put back together, but a couple I'm going to have to 3D print a case for. Or just throw the flash drive away. Plug it in, see if I care about it enough or not. Anyway. You guys ever have to do something like that? You know, go through and check everything now that you see, oh, fuck, you know?
I've never hit that level of paranoia, but I don't rule it out at any point.
Mad Ben, you ever torn apart everything in a closet because you thought there might have been a camera in there?
Not everything in a closet, but I have replaced some parts in a car before. And after I got everything back together, I had a bolt that went to the firewall left over.
Yeah, it's fine.
I kind of thought that after I looked around for a while, wondering where the hell this came from. And then I got a box and marked it pieces parts and stuck it in the trunk. And threw the bolt in that. And later when I found out it was a pretty good idea to do since the bolt didn't go to my car, it was somebody fucking with me. Seeing if I would take my engine back apart to find where the bolt went.
Oh.
There are more than one asshole out there. I did that to a dude called Huey way back in the day. Big as major. Massive. 10 times as stupid, though. And he pulled the engine out of his car, redid the head. So I threw an extra head bolt in with him. And he pulled that thing apart 3 fucking times. It was great.
The second time, did you walk in and take 2 bolts away?
No, I wasn't that clever.
I was going to say, suddenly you're the biggest asshole in this story, are you? I don't...
Oh, dude, don't get me wrong. It was meant to be an asshole move. The guy pissed me off. He did it in my car and then lied about it.
Oh.
I mean, if you just straight up said, yeah, sorry about that. It wasn't a bad dent, man. I just popped it back out. But,
Yeah,
he straight up lied about it, so fuck you, man. I threw that in there.
Understood. So, anyways, so I've seen a couple more articles on this. I didn't grab links. I just figured we'd talk about it because there's several about it right now. Just as a kind of a discussion topic without really any specific article about it. I think Microsoft is trying to get out of the operating system game.
Think?
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because they have been putting a lot of work into the Windows subsystem for Linux. The newest versions of it are coming out where it's pretty much a first-class citizen in the Windows ecosystem to where you can totally deploy any Linux software on it and it will run. They're using a very thin Hyper-V hypervisor to run their version of a Linux kernel, and then you can deploy whatever package set you want on top of it. And they're working on getting Xorg integration and all that stuff. And, you know, kind of what we were talking about the other day, I think Microsoft is going to transition out of kernel development and operating system development. They'll keep Windows. It'll still be around. It'll be a layer on top of a Linux kernel. So they'll probably still sell a product called Windows, but they're making the majority of their profit these days off Azure and Office 365, their cloud offerings. And they like that business much better because they get paid monthly, you know, in perpetuity for that, rather than, you know, you buy a copy of Windows with a computer, or, you know, when you're building one, you know, once. And yeah, it's a couple hundred bucks, and that's, you know, it's a hit for an operating system. But, you know, they don't get that hit very often, especially when most people don't replace their computers, what, maybe every 4 years, unless you're like a teenager with a laptop and smash them all the damn time.
I mean, the WooFlu would have seen a giant uptick in PC sales, but I expect a decline in sales by mid-January next year.
Oh, yeah, because everyone will have one.
Yeah, and then you're going to wait 4 years before people upgrade.
I mean, they get a constant stream of income of people buying Office and Windows, but it's not, you know, and of course they've got their enterprise licensing, but they've laid off their entire QA team for Windows a few years ago with the Windows 10 stuff. They're not even bothering to do service packs and new operating system releases. Now they just do a seasonal release of patches and changes for Windows 10. You know, it used to be, you know, they would have taken these last couple of major updates for Windows 10 and packaged it up as Windows 12 or 2020 or whatever naming scheme they would have came up with. You know, I don't see them. I just don't see the way they're doing development that they want to maintain Windows as an operating system anymore. And you could look at Google's model with the Chromebooks, where, you know, laptops are not expensive as far as laptops goes. I mean, yeah, you can buy a high-end Chromebook, but the thing's running a Gentoo base and the Chrome browser, and that's it. And the whole point of selling you that thing is that you live in a Google ecosystem.
Yeah, not me, man. I free range.
Well, but you give up.
Yeah, look, dude, they can push all this shit as far as they want, like with the cloud computing and having to be signed into everything. Nah, I'm out.
Oh, fair enough. But so I could see Microsoft totally doing that, though. Just saying, you know what, we're going to build on top of the Linux kernel. It'll be the same desktop. They'll have DirectX and all that stuff. It won't be open source. But if it's all running on top of a Linux kernel, well, in the back end, it won't really matter. But, you know, if you're the kind of person who's into this shit, if you don't know Linux, start learning it. I think that's where things are going.
Yeah. Well, if it does go that way, then people might stop buying Windows. Because a big reason I think a lot of home users still use Windows, it comes on the computer, and they like playing video games and don't want to go through the headache of doing a Wine. I know it might be easy to set up the one time, but if I download a game from Steam, it works automatically on Windows. If Windows ceases to exist, game developers aren't going to stop developing things. They'll just start developing things for Linux.
Well, Steam has a Linux build already, and they have a lot of games that they wrap in, they call it Proton, but it's Wine and a DirectX to Vulkan, I think, if I'm remembering that right. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. Vulkan or OpenGL, I think it's Vulkan. But it wraps those calls and turns it into something that, you know, runs fairly well. In fact, that used to be the joke back in the day, is you could get like a well-tuned Linux system running Wine to run some of these games faster than the Windows builds, which was, you know, hilarious. So there's also for Linux an alternative game library thing.
Yeah, but one upside, if Windows does go this way, that won't really even be necessary anymore. Because Windows is running Linux. They think they're going to put enough extra work to make it where games won't just run on Linux?
No, I think they'll maintain DirectX as its own package, but it would be something along the lines of, you know, like you would probably pay Microsoft $50 to get access to their library and DirectX pack, and then you could just load it on any Linux ecosystem, right? I could see that. Because, again, it gets them away from having to make Lutris. That's the system I was thinking of. It's an open source thing. It's kind of like a Steam launcher, but it's meant to wrap up a whole bunch of different things, you know, GOG, itch, and things like that to be able to run them on Linux, even if they're Windows games, you know, through things like Wine and Proton. But anyways, so I just, you know, it's interesting, and I think that's is it going to be an overnight change? No, of course not. You know, we're talking about years. But
well, I think it's it might be the change that happens. How long was Windows 2000 a thing?
2000?
Yeah, quite a while.
I'm thinking 2000 or XP.
XP. XP was a thing for like 11 years officially, and there's still people rocking it today, not as much. Although I do have the XP story, if that's what you're referencing. We'll talk about that in a minute.
I was just thinking Windows 10 could be the XP, and then after that there's just the whole Windows Linux thing.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, right now they're
last forever.
Right now they're working on getting all the Linux stuff running on Windows, which to me seems like a good first step if you're going to start doing your major development on the Linux stack, on the Linux side of the house, to where if you've got it masked correctly in the operating system to where you don't know if it's running on Windows or Linux under the hood, so to speak, of them eventually just transitioning everything over to running on the Linux side of the house and eventually being like, yeah, you know, here's the Windows for Linux bundle. It's whatever they charge for it. And then, you know, maybe they'll even prepackage their own kernel or whatever, but, you know, it lets them take advantage of all the free open source development that people are doing. You know, and maybe they'll throw the Linux Foundation a donation or something every once in a while to keep it going or become members of it probably. But, I mean, the last time I saw stats for their cloud hosting platform, Microsoft's cloud hosting platform runs more Linux machines than Windows machines. Although that might have something to do with the fact that Linux machines don't need to be licensed. So, I don't know. Anyways, you guys ready for news stories? That's a YouTube link. That is not... Huh. What did I post a YouTube link to? Oh, that. Yeah, that's funny, but that's not what I meant. I guess I didn't copy the link correctly. Here we go. Try that again. Anybody in the IRC? That's a horrible, hilarious YouTube link. There we go. Okay. First one up is from flatpanelshd.com. In the beginning, Samsung TV owners were seeing ads for new streaming content, apps, or Samsung products. Owners are now complaining about larger, increasingly obtrusive, and unrelated ads. Sometime in 2016, Samsung began pushing a software update to enable ads in the user interface of previously acquired smart TVs as well as new TVs. The ads were shown above a new icon in the bottom menu. The move upset some owners of Samsung TVs, while others accepted it. Back then, the ads related mostly to new services, such as Gamefly, new content from close partners like Google Play or Amazon Video, new movies in theaters. We're not talking about that movie. That's horrible. Samsung's own services, such as TV Plus or smartphones. In the end of 2019, owners have started to voice their dissatisfaction with larger, increasingly obtrusive, and unrelated ads showing up in Amazon TVs. These include ads for canned beans or discount supermarkets, such as one embedded below, and they've got a photo on their community boards. Yeah, and people are complaining about paying, you know, $2,500 for a frame art TV, and they're getting ads on them. I mean, it's like, for God's sake, if you're going to put ads on the TV, cut the price. Do something to make people think that it's not, you know, an out-and-out just cash grab.
Well, remember the struggles I had hooking my TV up without a connection. Didn't even want to fucking turn on without one.
I know. Well, a lot of them don't anymore.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah, just another big fuck you to the consumer. You know what I mean?
Now, does the ad come on with the streaming service, or is it just a constant ad on your TV when you're not watching something?
Anytime you open the menu. So it's a smart TV. So anytime you go to the menu to like go to Netflix or Roku or any of the other apps, or if you're just changing channels or if you're adjusting settings, you're going to get an ad.
Or if I'm pulling up the menu to see what's on other channels.
Yeah, it's going to be, you're going to get ads in the menu.
Oh.
I mean,
I'm watching a commercial. I pull up the TV listings to see what else is on, and I get a commercial with my commercial.
I saw several articles talking about how this is going to be the year of the cord cutter, and I was like, eh, okay, we can talk. I mean, there's not really to talk about on decking for that. But it's like, you know, if even the TV is being that obnoxious, yeah. On its webpage intended for its business partners, Samsung boasts that it has 50 million smart TVs in operation and that it is the industry's largest ACR data set. ACR is short for automatic content recognition, and it means the TV uses identification technology to analyze and recognize the content displayed on the screen at any time. It is used to build a personal profile of you and your interests in order to serve native ads on the home screen and video ads on Samsung TV Plus, as well as ads on the biggest to the smallest screens. In other words, ads that venture beyond your TV. And there's apparently no way to turn it off. Yeah, they actually emailed Samsung Germany, and the response they got was, in general, the banner cannot be deactivated in the Smart Hub. We thank you for your feedback and assure you Samsung takes customer feedback into account in product development. Yep, they took that into account and put it right into the round file.
In general, that means there is a way to do it, sir. How do I do this? If it involves going in developer mode, I'm fine with that. Just explain how to do it.
So, Samsung is not alone. In April 2019, Google pushed a new sponsored row to the home screen of Android TV. It affects TVs from Sony and others. Panasonic has been experimenting with showing ads when you adjust audio volume. And European broadcasters have started using HBBTV to serve targeted ads. LG introduced an ad above its webOS menu, but it was later removed. Roku is hard at work turning its TV platform into a next-generation ad platform, while Android has been showing ads on Fire TV devices for years. Which is true, but they're usually for content on the Fire TV. Although occasionally I've seen ads for their tablets. But yeah, every time I've seen an ad on the Fire TV for anything, because I've got the one with little sticks, it's been for something else on the Fire TV, like a show or something that's on Amazon service. It hasn't been, the super lawyers up in Nashville or whatever the fuck, right? Or beans. let's see. And so what's the alternative? Apple's tvOS platform, and the Apple TV does not use ACR, and its ads are limited to content recommendation. Recommendations can be deactivated, and users can remove the app from the top row. So... yeah. Oh, by the way, the one of the tags on this article is Internet of Shit. So, I don't disagree. But, yeah. So, pretty much, the way you do this is you either buy a cheap TV that is not a smart TV and just doesn't do that kind of stuff, and then you set up, like, your custom Android box or just a PC. You never hook the TV itself up to the internet. It's always going through another box. So the TV only ever just sees, like, HDMI 1 or maybe HDMI 2 if you have, like, a cable box or something. But, like, or, and, you know, do everything through a receiver or some other device that's not, you know, just automatically forcing you to be on the internet to watch ads. But, I mean, it's that or start finding ways to root the damn TV to get the ads off. Yeah. Oh, are you found, what did we find here?
I'm just going, just for listeners, it seems to be legit.
Oh, they're pointing the DNS. they're using ad blocking DNS on the TV to get rid of ads.
So that's... there is a way. And here's one here. If you've got one of those Rokus or whatever, the Fire Sticks and shit.
Well, the Fire Stick's just running Android under the hood. You can root that thing and then install whatever you want.
Yeah, install AdBlock. But yeah, that's just two little quick ones there we can add to the show notes.
Yeah, I'll throw those into Dojo, even though I'm not...
like that's, we won't that's read a 30-second look and read. So, you know, results may vary.
Yeah, it's just obnoxious that these companies are just like, yeah, fuck you, we're putting ads on everything. It's like, no, you don't own anything. We're pushing our software onto this hardware. Fuck you. You're looking at our ads. You want to get people to start, I mean, you know, to start just rooting everything. This is why you need to learn Linux, people, so you can actually choose what the fuck your stuff is doing. Damn it, that you stupid YouTube link keeps coming back into my clipboard somehow. There. So, next article. This is from CBCCA. So, this is the Canadian Broadcasting Company. Ontario police use COVID-19 database illegally, civil rights suit groups find. Police forces across Ontario engaged in broad illegal searches of a now-defunct WuFlu database, two civil rights groups alleged Wednesday, claiming the use of the portal violated individual privacy rights for months. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association and the Canadian Constitution Foundation said in separate reports that many services use the database to look at the Great Sneeze Forward test results for a wide geographic areas and sometimes pulled up personal information unrelated to active calls. People weren't told that when they went for the boomer and tumor test that this information was being shared with police, and they certainly weren't asked for consent, said Abby Deshman, the criminal justice program director for the CCLA. CCIA. No, that is LA. Okay. Well, might be time to get my eyes checked. That should be a decision every person makes about what they want to do with their own personal medical information. In early April, the Ontario government passed an emergency order that allowed police to obtain the names, addresses, and dates of birth of Ontarians who had tested positive for Winnie the flu. The portal was aimed at helping protect first responders. Police access to the database ended on August 17th after a legal challenge was filed by a group of human rights organizers. The group, which included CCLA, argued that allowing police to access personal health records violated individuals' constitutional rights to privacy and equity. Data released in the context of the legal action showed that Ontario police conducted, police services conducted over 95,000 searches of the database while it was active. The CCF filed a Freedom of Information Act request to the province related to the police use of the database. On Wednesday, the CCF made public a June memo from the Solicitor General's office to the chiefs of police that warned against using the database beyond the express purpose of the emergency order. The CCF said the memo revealed a shocking misuse of personal health information by police. Quote, the police were caught using the COVID-19 database to look up names unrelated to active calls, to do wholesale posted code searches for COVID-19 cases, and even do broad-based searches outside officers' own cities, said the CCF litigation officer Christine Van Ginn. And if you're wondering, I did not replace the name of the Wu Flu with the Chink Chest or Flu Manchu or the Bamboo Burden when reading that quote, because it was, in fact, a quote. So, CCF has said it filed a complaint with Ontario's Privacy Commission over violations. So, the article goes on. But pretty much, again, this is why having these mass databases is not a great thing. Because, you know, it's like, oh, the police, they're not going to do anything wrong. Well, they're human. And when you create these kinds of the kind of ability that you're talking about, you have to recognize it could be abused. And if it's a broad access thing, likely will be.
Well, the outside of the city, I can't think of a justification for. I can see outside of calls, though. What if you're a patrol officer doing a traffic stop? If that data is there and you're concerned about cops being exposed to COVID-19, a traffic stop's just as good as a home call.
Well,
I'm still dealing with people.
So, they didn't really say anything about what the police were doing with the access. You're right. That's what ostensibly they were given access to it for. Saying access to the portal information was treated seriously and with due care. Yeah. Toronto police never used the database because of issues with accuracy and reliability. So, yeah, they never really justified what they were doing other than just, you know,
does Bob have the Flu Manchu?
Yeah.
Well, Bob's got the Flu Manchu. Like I said, I couldn't think of a justification for outside of your city because you're not going to be dealing with them. But when they say calls, calls generally mean a person calling in saying, hi, some brat 5-year-old just egged my house, come beat him with a nightstick. Or my husband's beating me and it's not Tuesday, it's outside of our agreed beating me times. Can you come arrest him now? You know, something that brings you to a house. Calls don't generally refer to something like a traffic stop, and I could see them still using it for that if that's what it was put there for. I'm not sure how much I think the cops really need that, because from now, I am not a doctor, but I do fake one on the internet on occasion to make money. So I think it takes more the prolonged contact than here's your speeding ticket, don't run that stop sign, and can I see your insurance, to contract the great sneeze forward as far as contacting with people. Could be wrong. Doctors have been wrong before.
I just come back to just, you have to realize when these kind of databases are set up, there's a high probability that somebody's going to abuse it, no matter what the original intentions of when you set it up.
So, yeah.
Of course, then you could get into the whole argument of, well, if you have, you know, if you have the plague, you know, should that be public information or not? I mean, I could see some people arguing that it should out of public safety. I would disagree with them personally, but I could see somebody arguing it.
So should we publish a list of everybody with hepatitis, herpes, AIDS?
If it's contagious, I could see some people making the argument, especially if you have a public healthcare system.
Where do you stop?
It kind of depends on how it's transmitted. Because me hanging out with in a room full of people with Hep C, I'm not getting Hep C. Now, me fucking a room full of people with Hep C, that instance, I think they should tell me if they know. But when it comes to COVID, there's no swapping of body fluids needed. It's just being in the same room.
Well, I mean, you talk about taking it to extremes. In California, didn't they just pass a law about making it not criminal to knowingly spread AIDS?
Yeah, we don't talk about California anymore.
Well,
California is dead to us.
They're not people. They're stupid.
Yeah, they ceased to be people a long time ago.
But I could see an argument for something like of Ebola. Let's say Ebola has, we're gonna make Super Ebola, like out of that movie that I'm forgetting the name of right now. 100% fatality rate. 75% chance of transmission. I could see something like that if you have it being a need-to-know public record. You need to be isolated so that you don't kill all the public.
So
AIDS isn't that transmittable.
Well, it's a devil's advocate argument, right? Just I was pulling it out to the conversation, but I don't know. I don't like it.
This will all come to fruition. We'll come out when we're forced for mandatory Wu flu vaccination. Wait for that fight, man. If you thought the mask fight was a big one, wait for the vaccine fight.
Oh, we don't have a mandatory flu vaccination.
That's what I mean. This is not. I'm not going to get into it, but let's just wait. We can talk about it when the fight starts.
I could see that being the opening. It's like, because there's been a lot of people who say we should have mandatory flu vaccination.
But it's not even.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll wait till we get. We'll burn that bridge when we come to it.
Next story. This one's from Ars Technica. September has been a busy month for malicious Android apps, with dozens of them from a single malware family alone flooding either Google Play or third-party markets, researchers from security companies said. Known as Joker, this family of malicious apps has been attacking Android users since late 2016, and more recently has become one of the most common Android threats. Once installed, Joker apps secretly subscribe users to pricey subscription services and steal SMS messages, contact lists, and device information. Last July, researchers said they found Joker lurking in 11 seemingly legitimate apps downloaded from Play 500,000 times. Late last week, the researchers from security firm Zscaler said they found a new batch comprising 17 Joker-tainted apps with 1,200,000 downloads. The apps were uploaded to Play gradually over the course of September. Security firm Zipperium. Okay. Meanwhile, reported on Monday that company researchers found 64 new Joker variants in September, most or all of which were seeded in third-party app stores. As ZDNet noted, researchers from security firms Pareto and Anaquink, I don't know how to say some of these names, found more Joker outbreaks this month in July. In July, respectively. Anaquick said it had found more than 13,000 samples since it first came to light in December 2016. Joker is one of the most prominent malware families that continually targets Android devices, Zscaler researcher Viral Gandhi wrote in last week's post. Despite awareness of this particular malware, it keeps finding its way into Google's official application market by employing changes in its code, execution methods, or payload retrieving techniques. One of the keys to Joker's success is its roundabout way of attack. The apps are knockoffs of legitimate apps, and when downloaded from Play or a different market, contain no malicious code other than a dropper. After a delay of hours or even days, the dropper, which is heavily obfuscated and contains just a few lines of code, downloads a malicious component and drops it into the app. Zipperium provided a flowchart, so... Yeah, it's. I mean, this looks like any other malware that sits and waits for a bit before it, you know, goes out and pulls in the malicious bit of the code. The way I usually deal with shit like this at work is to figure out the URLs that it's going to call, which sometimes is hard, sometimes it's not so hard. Depends on how the dropper's written. And I'll just go block all the URLs at the firewall so that even if the malware makes it onto a machine, at least we're blocking all their downloads. We have seen interesting behavior when that happens from machines that were infected. The most common of which was it would start to crash because it would not check to see if it actually got the code and try to execute it. So again, you just reimage the machine, but, anyways, evasion techniques include encoded strings inside samples where the app is downloaded in a DEX, which is an Android native file that comprises the APK package, possibly along with other DEXs. The DEXs are described as MP3, CSS, or JSON files. To hide further, Joker uses code injection to hide among legitimate third-party packages. And then they list out some of the packages like Unity, Dynamite, things like that, already installed on the phone. The purpose of this is to make it harder for malware analysts to spot the malicious code, as third-party libraries usually contain a lot of code, and the presence of additional obfuscation can make the task of spotting injected classes even harder. So, pretty much, the thing here that this malware does, besides being, you know, using some pretty advanced techniques to keep itself on the phones, is it signs you up for these, like the fortune a day kind of things, you know, the bullshit that, you know, they charge you $10 a month for and send you a text message a day with, you know, your horoscope or an uplifting message or, you know, whatever other bullshit these things do.
An e-magazine subscription.
Yeah, but if the thing's an SMS message or something coming in, they'll sign up your phone number for that, and then the malware will delete the SMS so you don't know what's happening until you get the bill. And they won't sign you up for one. They'll sign you up for like 20 of the damn things. And, of course, the people running the malware control them. So, you know, they usually get a couple of them before you get them off your bill and get it cleaned up, right? So, it's kind of nasty because it's, you know, it just ends up on your phone bill. And it's hard to get rid of. So.
And there's your carrier eating a couple charges.
Oh, of course.
Because your bank's not going to, if they can help it.
So, speaking of your carrier eating charges, next article is from... did you all have anything else on that?
No, I'm good.
No, we're good.
All right, he's like, yeah, just don't use a cell phone. You're good.
Well, I was going to say that should be an up for... using the Google Play Store instead of a third-party store, But they infiltrated the Google Play Store, so Google's not doing a lot better with keeping their store clean.
I'm more and more thinking.
Party, apparently.
I'm more and more thinking that Apple's whole marketing thing on being the right one for privacy might not be, you know, more I read about it, the less the bullshit it sounds. And it's like, you know, maybe I ought to go back to the iPhone for my next phone. I don't know. I kind of don't like the walled garden, but at the same time.
That's how you keep snakes out. I mean, it is a trade-off. Do you want freedom or do you want security?
Yeah, you're right.
Because when it comes to freedom, it also becomes the freedom to be stupid. And in some instances, someone's not watching out for you as much.
Well, something I've definitely done on the iPad is started using, you know, running a Raspberry Pi 4 off the USB-C port with it set to Ethernet gadget. So when I want to be stupid, I go do that on the Raspberry because I don't care if I blow up one of them. They're cheap, you know, versus an iPad.
Google could do something with its if it played its Google Play Store as the walled garden and then just let you download from third-party stores. You could have both worlds. You could have the I want to be stupid or just go to the Google store and you're good because Google's being Nazis with everyone that's in their store, but their Nazi activities keeping you safe.
Huh.
But it appears that they're not going hardcore enough in Google Play to keep bad actors out. And then you're still opened up to the third-party threat as well.
They get into iOS too, by the way. We're picking on Google because the article's on Android, but iOS does get the malware, but they don't get it as often that I've noticed, anyways. So, but you're right, and that's because Android's is a much more open system. So, next article is from Engadget. Back in March, the FCC ordered all carriers and phone companies to adopt the Stir/Shaken protocol by June 30th, 2021, as an effort to combat robocalls. Now the commission has announced new rules to clarify carriers' obligations regarding the technology's implementation. One of the new rules, for instance, protects consumers from surprise charges. To be precise, it prohibits voice service providers from adding line item charges to their bills for caller ID authentication. So basically, the government is telling the phone companies you cannot charge extra for caller ID because robocalls have gotten that bad.
Charges for caller ID?
AT&T still did when I was.
Isn't
with
that
them.
A feature?
It's like $5 a month. Actually, Verizon's got a charge on theirs too, but it's their call filtering service.
I was going to say let me guess, but it still comes up number unknown.
Oh, I still get 4 or 5 a day. It's ridiculous.
I had one at 7 o'clock last night. That's probably the latest I've had in a long time for a robocall.
Oh, I get one every day at 8 o'clock, 8 a.m. first thing in the morning. Fucking scam call. If I answer it, they're trying to sell me health insurance. If you don't answer it, your phone's still ringing at 8 a.m. It's like fuck you, fuck everything about you. And because I get calls from work that are actually important, I have to look at it and make sure it's not my boss or somebody calling. Because the phone system at work masks phone numbers and it doesn't always come up with the customized ringtones. And yes, I've ignored an important phone call because it didn't play the customized ringtone and I thought it was a robocall.
And it's time for open enrollment. People are going to start getting hit with those a lot, especially elderlies for scam.
Dude,
somebody just got a message.
My grandmother has been calling me all for the past couple of weeks for almost every one of these she gets to make sure they're scams. And I don't mind it.
Got bitten?
But it's just like, oh my God.
So what? You almost get bitten or does she just figure out that it's a scam?
Both.
Excited to tell you.
Both.
Okay. Well, you can't fault.
No, you know, I don't fault her for it, but it does get a little obnoxious by the third one for the Amazon scam.
Yeah, you're like, come on, Grandma. Like, we've been through this. This is definitely a scam.
So, so if anybody doesn't know what they're doing now is they're calling up people and saying, this is Amazon security. Did you order a cell phone to send to China? Or something like that. And yeah, having to walk her through checking her Amazon orders and making sure that it's all right every time, because they're really good at scaring people. It's like, we need access to your Amazon account now to track this. And she goes, oh, I can't give you that. Well, who can? And then she'll, you know, say somebody in the family, well, can we talk to them? They're not here right now. And then, of course, they, at this point, they'll hang up on her. But like, they're really good at winding people up. It's social engineering.
If you're Amazon, don't you already have access to my Amazon account?
You'd think.
Yes, but for security reasons, we're going to need you to read that out.
We're going to need your password, your social security number, any credit cards you might have, and the balance of your bank account, please. So,
want to overdraw your account there?
We're going to do a one-time test withdrawal of $1,000.
The FCC is also, oh, actually, I've been getting a funny one lately. Of course, I hang up on them right away because I'm usually in meetings for work, and having my phone going off in the background doesn't help. And so they'll leave a voicemail saying that this is the agency, and we're going to take $400 out of your account, or we're going to charge you $400 on your credit card to maintain your account. Please call this number to verify. And it's like, fuck you. Because I know that that's going to get somebody terrified. They're going to call up and say, I can't afford no $400 charge. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, actually. Yeah. And, you know, they'll take them for everything they got. So the FCC is also requiring providers to upgrade their networks if they can't currently implement STIR/SHAKEN, which is an internet protocol standard for IP-based networks. Otherwise, they'll have to develop a non-IP caller ID verification solution. That said, the FCC will give small voice providers that can't adapt to the technology yet limited extensions so long as they implement robocall mitigation programs. Americans have been getting inundated with robocalls for years, and the issue has only been getting worse. According to UMail, which provides a service to block these calls, people in the U.S. received 58.5 billion robocalls in 2019. That's 22% more than 2018's. The STIR/SHAKEN protocol gives carriers a way to verify a call is legitimate before it even reaches the recipient. This can help reduce the effectiveness of illegal spoofing, which is a technique commonly used by robocallers to fool consumers to think they're taking calls from a government agency or someone in their area. This is why all your scam calls have a phone number that is like, you know, yours, but the last four digits are different. They're trying to make you think it's a local thing. And of course, you'll pick it up, and it's like, you know, we'll sell you penis pills or whatever the fuck. So, you know, and even then, nine times out of ten, they're not selling anything. They're just trying to get information because they can then turn around and resell that. So, or they're trying to trick you into, you know, giving them your financials and letting them charge you for some service. Usually it's, you know, this is the whole fake Microsoft thing. It's like, oh, yeah, your computer has a virus. And
which one?
Yeah. The one you're on right now, the Commodore 64, that's impressive. This thing doesn't even have a network card. And they go, oh, yeah, that one. It's like, you don't know what a Commodore 64 is, do you? So, it's, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I do not. I'm on the lowest rung of the caste system. I'm lucky I'm not killed or beaten.
Yeah, we talked about that.
So, dude, I'm watching this old 70s film yesterday, and it was all about sales and selling stuff. And they're like, yeah, don't... This is just like straight up, don't give me Indian peoples. They don't buy shit. These people, they live like rats in houses. I'm like, damn, this is a brave movie. Like, yeah, no chink numbers either. Those chinks don't spend any money. I'm like, holy shit. And no Hebes. Like, wow, this movie is out of this world for the modern times.
Go watch Boiler Room sometime. You want to see? Cause that,
oh,
that's...
yeah, Boiler Room.
Yeah.
This was... This wasn't Boiler Room, but it was one of those classics, and I can't remember what it was called. But you know the character in The Simpsons, the salesman, Phil? Or
yeah.
Gil? The movie has that the original character of that guy, Gil. They're selling land in a scam land deal.
Jeez.
There's a guy in it just like Gil. I think they modeled the character off that original movie for Gil.
Ah, they probably did. I mean, Simpsons lived a lot of characters like that.
Yeah.
So, last article I have for tonight is from ZDNet, but it's all over the place. Windows XP leak confirmed after user compiled the code into a working operating system. So, for anybody who doesn't know, on 4chan, the XP in 2003, I believe, server source code, or at least a good chunk of it, was leaked. And how big was that? Let me go into my downloads folder real quick.
That'd be on Pastebin, wouldn't it?
The link I got was off Pastebin because there was a couple of different ones and a lot of them people had been fucking with. It's 3 gig for both XP and well, the NT5 source is what I ended up pulling down. It's got Win2K3 and Windows XP SP1 in there.
Not bad.
So I thought it'd be worth preserving that. So I've got a copy of it. Am I going to do anything with it? Probably not. But yeah, the Windows XP and Server 2003 source code that was leaked online last week on 4chan has been confirmed to be authentic after a YouTube user compiled the code into a working operating system. Shortly after the leak occurred last week, ZDNet reached out to multiple current and former Microsoft software engineers to confirm the validity of the leaked files. At the time, sources told ZDNet that from a summary review, the code appeared to be incomplete, but from the components they analyzed, the code was authentic. NT Dev, a U.S.-based IT technician behind the eponymous Twitter and YouTube accounts, was one of the millions of users who downloaded the code last week, but rather than wait for an official statement from Microsoft that is likely never come, NT Dev decided to compile the code and find out. According to the video shared online, the amateur IT technician was successful in compiling the Windows XP code over the weekend and Server 2003 yesterday. Reports are indeed true. It seems that there are some components missing, such as winlogin.exe and a lot of drivers. NT Dev told ZDNet in an interview today describing his work on XP. NT Dev said these missing components mean the leaked XP code is not yet in a fully usable state, such as for a full OS replacement, but the code is nevertheless authentic. Certain files, such as the kernel and the Explorer, can be compiled easily, and I have some programs from the compiled source of XP, and it seems they are identical to the retail versions of Windows, NT Dev said. Bearing the missing components, NT Dev believes source code can be used for compiling all the SKUs as well as the free optimized retail builds. As for the leaked Server 2003 source, the second major Windows OS version included in last week's leak, NT Dev said the code was similar to the XP. The leaked source code of Server 2003 is actually more complete than the XP one, but it lacks, just as the XP one, the WinLogin source code. I presume this is due to the fact that it may contain code for the activation process, but that's just an assumption. However, unlike XP, he managed to build a workable installation of 2003, but he had to substitute some files, being WinLogin, mainly. Last week's leak also included the source code for several other operating systems, such as Windows 2000, Embedded, Windows NT, and MS-DOS. NT Dev told ZDNet they already compiled the NT code base when it was first leaked online this year or earlier this year. So, yeah, pretty much this isn't surprising at all. I've listened to interviews with a lot of people who've worked at Microsoft, a little bit more candid interviews, and people were taking copies of the source code tree home to work on it all the time. So, apparently, I'd be willing to bet there's thousands of copies of the source code sitting on just, you know, an ex-dev's laptop somewhere that they could take and upload if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, wasn't it Pixar that got saved because I think it was Toy Story 4 they lost a bunch of assets for and somebody had, quote, taken it home to work on, quote, and was able to bring it back and they were able to still make the movie? I think that's what it was. But it's been a while since
I don't doubt it.
But
yeah.
The thing is, you might think, oh, the Wine Project could look at this and get a lot of benefit out of it. Or the React OS guys, or somebody else who wants to make their own, you know, replacement open source operating system.
Only if they want to get sued.
That's the problem. You can't. I mean, you could certainly make an optimized free version of XP off this, replace the missing components with some open source stuff, or, you know, write a replacement for WinLogin, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but essentially, man, you're just hanging a poster in a house that's already built. Yeah. Like,
if you're a developer on the Wine Project, make sure you do not touch the source code. And I think they know that because the Wine Project has always been very, very clear about saying, no, we do clean room development. Same thing with the React OS guys. Because if they don't, if they look at the Windows source code, I mean, if they even look at it, Microsoft can sue those projects out of existence. Now, I don't think they would this day and age, especially what we talked about at the top of the show. But, well, maybe not Wine, but the ReactOS guys, they might go after them. Their lawyers would probably say they had to. That's one of the things that gets weird about trademark enforcement and intellectual property is, like, you don't have a choice if you don't sue for it, but you give up your rights to it. So, but also, and you know, there's some executive at Microsoft who'd be like, no, shut them down. We don't want the competition. So,
anyways. How much of XP is still in Windows 10?
Well, not as much as you might think. That was one of the big things with Windows 8 is they were trying to rewrite a lot of components of it in .NET. Now, they ended up not being able to do that, but that was one of the big things with Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 10 was they were rewriting components of the operating system in the newer languages, trying to get it up to speed. You know, Windows XP is still based on the old NT source code, and the NT stuff is all C that was originally, a good chunk of it was inherited from IBM, because IBM wrote a lot of the original NT source code. You know, and Microsoft wrote a lot of the source code that ended up going into OS 2, strangely enough. I don't remember exactly the deal on that, but it was one of these things where they were trading projects and trying to make sure everything was compatible, I think. But, XP was still based on the NT code. And Windows...
XP was the last user-friendly interface.
Well, yeah, once you turned off the Fisher-Price theme.
Yeah.
But, so, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm sure there's going to be some underground... I mean, there were always underground builds of XP that were based off the retail stuff, but since the source code's out there now, it would be interesting to see if somebody goes compiling a 64-bit build of XP that is, you know, maybe they've slipped some other stuff into it so you can run some of the newer, say, DirectX or... things like that, but I mean, it'd be totally pirate, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of these leaks. I'm kind of suspecting there won't be. There might be a few underground builds that float around, but maybe people tinkering with the code as a hobby project. But I don't see.
Yeah, that's all you're gonna see.
Some major
projects.
Underground OS that people start using. You might see interesting ports of it. I think that'd be the coolest thing. Is like where somebody makes a build of XP that runs on, like, an original Xbox or something, right? That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So, anyways, let's... anybody have anything on that, or are we ready to move on?
We're ready to move on.
Good.
All right. Only got one thing I'm going to talk about. We're going to put RU's links for turning off the ads on your smart TV in the Dojo list as well for the show notes. But for tonight, for Dojo, I've got one project for you, and this is pretty cool. It's called the TorPi. And this is a project that's based around the idea of taking a Raspberry Pi. They're using a Raspberry Pi 2 here, so they're not even using a new one. But apparently it works with everything from the first gen all the way through the 4. I don't see the zeros on here, interestingly enough. I would think you could get that. I mean, if it works with the Raspberry Pi 1, surely you can make it work with the Raspberry Pi 0. But you need to stick two Wi-Fi adapters on it to... Maybe that's the thing, is you need to add extra Wi-Fi. Oh, the 0 doesn't have enough ports without a hub, so I don't know, maybe. Anyways, though... they've got a list of here of the chipsets you can use, mainly the Realtek 8188, which is pretty common, pretty cheap. Like those little EDI Max adapters you can get on Amazon for $5, those kind of things. But pretty much what the thing does is one Wi-Fi, you set up a Raspberry Pi with two Wi-Fi cards on it. One is its internet connection. You connect it to your router. You connect it to the public Wi-Fi, whatever it is you're using. The other is emulating an access point, and then on the Raspberry Pi, you run the Tor proxy. So what this does is this forces all the traffic that connects to the access point that it runs to go over Tor. So we've talked in the past about some other projects that you have two devices for Tor. One is your router and one is your client. This is using the Raspberry Pi as the router. So what this means is if any client device going through it is incapable of communicating to the internet except going through Tor, because the Raspberry Pi is acting like a firewall. So if you did get bad code on the device that tried to reveal your actual location, or you're just being a dumbass and forget to connect to the Tor proxy before connecting to IRC, as an example, this won't let you make that kind of mistake. So, and they've got a write through here of how to set it up. Pretty much, you take a standard Raspberry Pi, you grab their package for Raspberry Pi, you install the Tor proxy, and you're good. So, configure some IP capable firewall rules and test it, and you've got a Tor router device. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's a nice little setup, especially if you are in something where you want to mask your traffic. I could see it being quite useful. And their picture here, they show a Raspberry Pi 2 with a couple of USB Ethernet or USB Wi-Fi on it and a battery bank to run it. So could totally chuck this in a backpack and go to, what's a place that has Wi-Fi that's still open? McDonald's, maybe? Well, I don't think you can go in any restaurants right now since, that's a before the times thing.
Back in the before times. I remember.
When we could go places and see people and you weren't accosted in public for not wearing a mask.
National fucking travel. Fuckers.
Of course, it is kind of cool when you go in a grocery store and see people walking around wearing a full-on Spider-Man mask. I thought that was actually awesome.
Oh, dude, I don't mind the dystopian aspect of it. Don't get me wrong. That's really been interesting and fun to look at. And I just take the word COVID out of everything and apply zombie. And it makes the news reports so much easier to take. I don't know, man. I'm just waiting for the, yes, it has run its course, but there are other effects. This is why we can't do X.
Yeah, that's probably going to be what happens.
But they sort of opened employment up here now. And, there are queues for like 6,000 people applying for fucking kitchen hand jobs.
Oh, people are desperate for work. I mean, everybody's shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been very lucky in that my job is something I can do remote. But they're saying I'm probably not going to go back in the office till next year.
Well, that's what I've always said to my wife. I said, we've landed ourselves in the luckiest spot ever, just how we've set ourselves up. Because I'm looking at some extended family and on both sides is struggling. And, 12 months ago, this sun was in their face. They're running through the fields. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now their whole world has just collapsed in and they got no idea what the fuck's going on. And I worry for them. I mean, we've all been pretty lucky that we've been in unique positions.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, even if I was still wall and floor tiling, it wouldn't have cost me any work. If anything, I would have been busier. Can't get a tradesman for love or money right now.
That's one thing that surprised me. Refinances are through the roof. I figured there wouldn't be enough people with money.
Rates are down.
You think about
right now, all
the people that, all the people that go on international travel, man. I mean, that's billions of dollars alone that's going to be plowed into housing. Extra food, exercise equipment for home. New laptops.
There was an article the other day. People can't find desks.
Yeah.
There's a big thing about people using a piece of wood in some crates to make desks. And it's like,
welcome to my first apartment.
Yeah,
right,
really?
Yeah, deal with it.
It's like, I've been using a folding table as my desk for eight, now granted, it's a heavy-duty table, but ages. I've still got it over there as a workbench. I did finally break down and buy a nice desk, but, I mean, fuck. You know, yeah, that was an adulting do, thing, man. Not because, yeah, well, anyways.
You just got to make do.
Hell, a buddy of mine's first apartment, his workbench for magic card sorting, of all things, oh boy, did he have a system. And if you walked in that room and sneezed, he would kick your ass. He had an old door that he was propping up on cinder blocks, and that was his second table. And he was using,
on,
he was using that, it was covered in magic cards, stacks of magic cards. And he had them sorted by the stack, but just by turning them at angles so that you could tell what where one stack ended and the other began. And, oh my God, I don't know what he was doing, but crack probably. Anyways.
It was his system.
It was his system. That is damn right.
I kind of want to go through there and straighten some of the stacks right now.
Oh, I said, oh, dude, you got a mess here. And he goes, don't fucking touch it. I'm like, what? He goes, those are sorted. I'm like, those aren't sorted. Those are just like a mess. He goes, no, they're sorted. Okay. Of course, later that same night, he got drunk, bumped the table, and knocked all of them over. So,
nice.
Anyways. Let's close this out. I'm going to start hitting sound effects. Right. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. Tonight in the IRC, myself, Sardonyx, the bot, Cyberlard, Cykros, DPView, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
I have from a professional source that I should not become an intravenous drug user.
Good to know. Are you? Closing thoughts.
I, too, cannot become an intravenous drug user as well as I am afflicted, the same as Madman.
Huh. I never seem to have a problem finding a vein on me. But, anyways. That's
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Now let's go nose down and call it a night.
Shut up, Wesley.